keeping you up to date on current news and events in and around Prince George. This is After 9 on 93.1 CFIS FM.
All right, with me on the line from Vancouver Island is Chris Markovich, who is going to be launching a project in the new year that is not totally unlike this show, but we'll be doing its own thing. Chris, tell us a little bit about the podcast that you're going to be starting in the new year.
Thanks for having me on the show, Stuart. I appreciate it. Podcast is called Left Behind, Socialism in the Age of Right-Wing Populism. And it's basically a response to the move to the right of our political discourse. And as you mentioned, my focus is going to be not very much unlike yours. It's going to focus on socialism, on left-wing politics. Basically, my goal is to raise the voices of the disaffected, people who would otherwise not get a voice. And so I'm hoping to talk to folks around the world, and in Canada, and of course in British Columbia, where I live and where you live, about those issues that are important to them. Excuse me.
Now, you use the term discourse, and I think that's very useful, right? The conversation that's happening in our mainstream media keeps moving to the right. And so one of the things I'm curious about is this word you put in the title of your show, this term populism. Now, How does populism relate to this question of our big conversation? Are we trying to offer a left populism, or are we critics of populism?
That's a really good question. And I think that the first part of that answer would be the criticism of and the critique of that populism, because as far as I understand it, and as far as I can see, populism is reactionary politics. It looks as though most of what policy has been enacted by populist governments has been a reaction to either public unrest or public sentiment or opinion polls. And while it's, you know, can obviously lead to governments that quote unquote are looking out for the public interest, they don't necessarily always enact policy that is actually in the interest of the public good. It's only what's popular. And just because something is popular doesn't mean it's the right thing to do.
Right. Now, when I use the term populism, I'm an academic. What it means, it refers to a kind of discourse, a way of talking about politics that constructs an us versus them dynamic. Populists argue that they represent the real citizens, the real people, the salt of the earth or whatever. And then there's this group, this small group who are not the people, that are blamed for various things. So when you look at populism in Canada in the 90s, you might think of, like, you know, a Mike Harris or a Ralph Klein or even a Mike Harcourt talking about, we got to crack down on the welfare cheats and deadbeats who are ruining our country and that sort of thing. But isn't really the most populist thing we've seen in the past 10 years the Occupy movement, this idea of the 1% versus the 99%?
That's exactly it. And I think that for folks that want to push populism as a driving force for political change, I think that those kind of movements have a lot of good ideas. Now, when it comes to what I want to talk about and when it refers to populism, it looks as though it's more of a social kind of issue rather than a class kind of issue. And some of it can be linked as well to, you know, feeling like, you know, they're not or governments aren't looking out for the, you know, the common people or the common workers, that sort of thing. But then what these movements do is that they twist it and they push the us versus them conversation to be about us, meaning people who were born and raised here and are, you know, the quote unquote, you know, real Canadians or real Americans, versus people that, you know, immigrated or people that, you know, were refugees. And, you know, let's be honest, most of those refugees were created based on imperialist policies enacted by the countries that are now facing these refugee, quote unquote, crises. And that's where the them comes from now. It's not just, us meaning the people versus them, i.e. the government. Now it's us, you know, the nativists versus them meaning the immigrants. And so I think the conversation has been twisted in that way. And that's where populism has taken footholds in America and is starting to in Canada as well.
So from your observations of the federal election, who tried out populism? How did it go? And why do you think what do you make of the results using populism as your main unit tool of analysis?
So in Canada, I don't think that federally populism has succeeded as of yet. Certainly the People's Party tried that with their, you know, message of, you know, keeping things for Canadians and for, you know, folks who were born in Canada. We saw some of the ads that they used on Twitter, for instance, you know, with the, you know, picture of the baby with the blue eyes and saying, you know, don't you want to protect your children, that sort of thing. But it didn't really sit well with a lot of folks in Canada. Now, provincially, that's a different story. We have seen, you know, some successes in Ontario and more recently in Alberta. And now with this Wexit movement, which for one reason or another, you know, obviously isn't the same sort of movement that we're seeing in America, but it's kind of close, where this sort of, you know, separatist sentiment is trying to kind of piggyback itself off of the sentiment in Quebec, but it doesn't understand the fundamental difference and the historical complexities of separatism in Quebec, whereas in Alberta, they just think that they can do whatever they want. And because they have the oil reserves, that the federal government is just going to, you know, bend to their will, which is obviously false.
So now you're obviously the purpose of getting a show like this, doing a show like this, is putting other voices on other viewpoints. When you look at the conversation that we're having in Canada, our national conversation, what do you think are some of the key voices that are being missed from the left?
Well, as far as in British Columbia and more specifically in the Lower Mainland and on the island, I think that there's a lot of room to speak with folks that are, you know, kind of living on the margins. For example, the opioid crisis has not gotten a lot of attention outside of a few, you know, left-wing publications, even though some of the stories that have come out have garnered some international attention. It's fleeting at best and typically only involves a couple of different organizations that have high profiles. But beyond that, the conversation kind of dies there. There's also a lot of room to talk to folks, say, that are not necessarily quote-unquote homeless, but they are very, you know, precarious in terms of their living situation. They're either couch hopping or they're living with friends or, you know, living out of their van or their car. And you don't necessarily get a lot of those folks into the conversation because a lot of the time they don't have access to the basic forms of communication that most of us take for granted, i.e. the internet, you know, cell phones, because, you know, a lot of folks just simply can't afford cell phone plans. So good luck getting a hold of them, right?
I think this raises a very important point here, because in a way there is something, this is a different kind of politics, because we hear about housing crises, opioid crisis from the perspective of experts rather than from the lived experience of people who are right there in the middle of it. So we're going to take a short break and come back and talk about those questions of what credentials we use to platform the voices we hear from.